Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barnes.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Scarlett's going to join us later. She's out trying to buy several car dealerships right now. On the lineup today, we're getting tough and we're getting physical. And we're talking two of the most physical contact sports in the world, rugby and boxing.
That's right, Michael. Joining us later in the program, we are going to speak with Owen Scannell, founder and CEO of Premier Rugby Sevens. We'll discuss how the Rugby Sevens is kickstarting a growing interest of the sport here in the U.S. Plus, later on, Matchroom president and renowned British sports promoter Eddie Hearn joins us in studio to discuss how he puts together a successful boxing event from, oh my goodness, Wembley to Madison Square Garden.
That is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. But first, we're talking basketball. And with the NBA draft now in the rearview mirror, it is time for some of these players to get paid. So joining us now to drop some knowledge on the sports agency business and how to develop professional athletes is Terrell Harris. He is the founder, chairman, CEO of Unique Sports Management International and the father of 76ers forward Tobias Harris.
Get out.
Terrell, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me here today.
I want to talk Unique Sports Management International. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so we've been in business since 1988, okay? And our goal is a company, you know, we provide contract negotiation where I'm one of the lead negotiators. And we also provide financial planning where we surround our guys with great expert companies like Goldman Sachs, like Wells Fargo, you know, Merrill Lynch. So we don't surround them with just one company. We surround them with about three companies because I believe let those companies overlook each other. So because if you look at in today's business world, sometimes these athletes have one guy, okay? And I find if you go back 20 years from now, a lot of those guys are bankrupt. And I'm like, how can they be bankrupt? Because a lot of times, you know, you just read recently in the news things that happen for major companies, guys, you know, stealing money and so forth. So I kind of had a different philosophy. I got three. And then my guys, we speak on a quarterly basis to these companies and understand where their money's at, where their money's being invested. So when they get in a conversation at a social event, people say, hey, man, I'm into this. Well, they can have an intelligent conversation with that individual, you know. So we do financial planning. We do an amazing job doing marketing endorsements. We get our guys in. You know, if you look at Tobias and he had the Goldfish commercial. If you look at Kelly Oubre, he has the Oakley commercial, Oakley endorsement. So we really get our guys in a lot of marketing, you know, marketing endorsements, and we kind of just help them with every day to day issues that they may be going through. Community service, like I talked about, we're heavily believe in that because, you know, these young kids in the streets, they need a role model.
That's right.
They need a guy saying, hey, man, you know, I'm a great basketball player, but I know that I got to get a college. I got to get an education. I got to have a plan A. I got to have plan B. I got to have plan C. I got to have plan D.
Right.
So that's kind of like giving a little summary about, you know, what we do.
Terrell, talk to me about, you know, some of these rookies, you know, these first years as they come into the NBA. What is the Players Association doing to prepare them for life in the NBA. I mean, now with NIL, with brands, with marketing, I mean, you know this. I mean, there's so much noise. You know, what are you telling your clients? What should first-year NBA up-and-comers be aware of?
Well, the NBA Player Association, what they do, they have an introduction, and they have these meetings and tell players what to look out for, watch all the different cons in the game that's going to come at them, all the different people that's going to come at them. But then after that, it's up to their agents. It's up to their agents to say, keep your – well, for me, I would say keep your circle small. Okay, and understand that you're chairman of your corporation. And so being a chairman, you have to be a professional player on the basketball court, got to be on time. You know, you got to team bus leave. You need to be early for that. The little things, if you're trying to establish yourself in the league, be the first one to practice, be the last one to leave. And then off the court, you know, you want to be a professional off the court. And I feel, and with all my clients, I've been doing this going on my 35th year, I feel like players are, you know, your role models. So, you know, there's kids, there's just like they, when they were young, pro people talked to them and encouraged them and mentored them. They have to do the same thing and give back to the community. Don't just say, "Oh, I got all my money, I'm living the life." No, give back. And so one thing that I encourage all my players, you know, what do you want to give back? You know, and then we try to put a plan around, you know, a mission statement around they're giving back into the community. Everybody has different, you know, Tobias, for instance, he wants to give back literacy. He wants to teach kids how, you know, to be educated in literacy. So he provides tutoring for kids, computer for kids, you know, and then he's all into it. He's hands on. So when you do that, you take responsibility as a role model, you know, and then be a professional, because at the end of the day, if you look at Bill Gates, you look at all these top chairmen, you know, they handle themselves as a professional, you know, in their business and off their business.
Well, and you made the key points is that's just not for any NBA athlete, what you said. You take that, hey, youngins out there, if you want to try to succeed in your career, be the first one in. Be the last one out.
Exactly.
You know, there's so many examples of what you can do, and try to be, you know, let's put it this way. In order to be the best, you got to work at it.
Exactly.
And that's something that, you know, everybody out there can take, which brings us to your son, Tobias, who is a great player. I'm probably going to get in trouble with the 76ers league and the league here. It's like, do they use your son the way they should?
Personally, I don't think so. And the reason I say that, well, Tobias isn't an assassin scorer. I mean, they can't stop him. Nobody in the league can stop him. So he has proven that over his career. You know, even when he was with the Clippers, he was assassin scorer, and they traded him for Blake Griffin. And people were like, "Oh boy, we're just tanking now." But guess what? He led them to the playoffs, and then he traded him because he got too good. They offered us $80 million. I turned down the $80 million, and they said, "Wow, what are you looking for?" I said, "Well, I want about $35 million a year." And they're like, "What?" Yeah, I said $35 million a year. So we're not gonna pay you that. So they traded him to the Sixers. Ever since they traded him to the Sixers, they put him in the corner. They didn't utilize him. He was not a priority in their offense. And that's kind of frustrating, because if you are kick butt player, right?
You said it right there.
Yeah, I didn't want to, you know, on the radio, you know. But like, if you're a kick up, but you don't want to be in a corner and it's twiddling your thumb. And so I just think that when they gave him opportunities, like, you know, there was a stretch like Joel didn't play and James Harden didn't play for like 15 games. He led the team average over 25 points. Then they come back. Okay, you got to go back in the corner. Then in the playoffs against Brooklyn, somebody got hurt, and Tobias led them in that whole series where he destroyed Brooklyn, shut down Bridges in that game. And then, you know, it's just like when they need him, he performs. And what is get frustrating, the fans don't really see how great a player he really is on a consistent basis just when they need him to do that. So as a player, Tobias is such a professional. Hey, I just do what they ask me to do. That's what they want to do. I'm not going to frown. I'm not going to complain. I'm a team guy. Tobias all about want to win a championship.
Yeah.
And he's always been like that even through high school. And he's like, you know, I'm going to put my ego to the side and I'm going to do what's right for the team. And a lot of people don't understand that. But if you look at his analytics on him, there's four players in the history of the NBA: Larry Bird, Dirk Nowitzki, Kawhi Leonard, and KD. Small forwards, I'm talking about, right. Has been a 90-50-40 player,
right,
in the history of the NBA. There's only four, and nobody talks about Tobias.
Right, right.
And when I bring it up to them, oh, we don't need to talk about that. So my question has always been, nobody can give me an answer. Why is he not utilized in their – why is he not a priority in their offense?
Well, let's hit on that, you know, NBA player, you know, young player-parent relationship, right? I don't know if you saw the movie Air, Sonny Vaccaro, Dolores,
yes,
Jordan,
yeah,
you know, Dolores Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, that relationship, you know, you take yourself out of the parent, you know, the father-son relationship you have with, you know, that you have.
Right.
And the relationship that David Falk has to have, or you have to have with, you know, someone who's not yourself, with another client.
Right.
You know, when you said keep it small, keep the circle small, you know, would you rather deal with, you know, a Michael Jordan, you know, where the parents are so involved? Does that make your life easier as the agent? Or does that make things a little bit more challenging for you because you've been there and you know how hard it is to be a parent and you have your own opinions of what your child should be doing out there?
Right.
And yet you're trying to make a decision economically that's in that client's best. Talk to us about how you kind of pull yourself out of that and make those decisions.
Well, a couple of things. I have another client, Kelly Oubre, who's,
yeah,
a great, great, great player,
yep,
great player, and he's a free agent this summer. We just try to do, just explain the facts to them, that, you know, like what's going on. Like you explain that we run analytics on them. So here's the analytics where you're at. Here's what you need to improve in. Here's what you're doing well in. Okay, here's what your off-court issues, right? Here's the things that we don't like. Maybe you have too many friends that shouldn't be in your circle.
Right.
Okay, so you know what? These friends shouldn't be in your circle. That's narrow that down to, you know.
It's a hard conversation to have with a client, right? I mean, some,
yeah,
of these people they've grown up with, they're friends for life. It's hard to, you know,
Well, you have to set the boundaries, like the boundaries, like I'm here to help you and help you grow, not only as a basketball player, but prepare you for when life after basketball. And so that's the most important with these guys. You know, they play basketball and then they play it all the time. And then when their career is over with, they have nothing to fall upon. What we try to do with our company is prepare our guys for the second career while they're pursuing their first career. And so that's a big help, because if we get them involved with so many corporations, so many businesses, so much business opportunity, like their transition would be easier. And they got to realize you're not going to meet billionaires and a lot of millionaires in the course of your time. You're going to meet a lot during your season. So make relationships with people. And like Kelly, I mean, he's just an amazing guy. He's just amazing, like Tobias. I mean, he's a hard worker. He got a family of two children. He has matured so much that it's unbelievable. And so once you do that, parents say, like, hey, oh, wow, you're a blessing to us. You're truly a blessing. And most important, we try to instill in our guys, you got to put God first. You got to do that, you know, because without the blessings of God, you wouldn't even be where you're at. So that's how we kind of, and then they respect where we're coming from. You know, they look at me. I have six kids. All of them got Division I scholarship. All of them, right, successful. I represented George Iceman Gervin. I represent Lynette Woodard. I represent Cliff Robertson. I represent over 18 guys playing in the National Basketball Association that's been successful today. And all these guys, we have relationships even to today. So we as our company, we just don't look at getting a client. I consider myself a lifestyle manager, not just an agent.
I always think about my father. God rest his soul. He served in World War II and all the other stuff. And he told me the best advice ever. He said, son, I gave you this name, Barr. Don't embarrass me.
Yes, sir.
Don't go out there and do something stupid. You know, it's like this is, and which goes back to what you're saying. Choose your friends wisely.
Yes, sir, for sure.
You're exactly right.
Well, Michael, you might not know this, but Toro was just recently inducted into the New York State Basketball Hall of Fame, and he won the Lifetime Achievement Award. Toro, talk to us about that. I mean, what does that mean? You know, I mean, that was just in April, no?
Yes, April 23rd. Oh, yeah, that was a great achievement. What was great, I got into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Yeah. I was a really good basketball player, like I told people. I could shoot the lights out. But what really was more important to me that they gave me the Barry Kramer Lifetime Achievement Award. And that says a lot because I appreciate that award just as well as the Basketball Hall of Fame because I'm really big on giving back, mentoring people, giving back to the community. And I didn't really recognize that people, you know, seeing what I'm doing. So that just shows you a lot of people see what you're doing because I don't really try to toot my horns in that. Every year we have a benefit that we raise scholarship money for foster cares and disadvantaged kids in Long Island. And so, it was just an amazing feeling where 500 people came and all my kids came and then, you know, they like, oh, you know, your kids, they don't sometimes know how good you was. You know, they forget, how good was you? And then they say.
You always got to get the challenge from the youngins, man, you know.
So they's like, oh, wow, you was that good. You could play. So, but like I said, both of those awards was amazing and I'm so blessed and thankful, you know, to God, he put me in those positions to receive that award. So that really was touching.
Terrell Harris, Chairman, Unique Sports Management International, father of Tobias Harris. Use him right, Philly. Did I say that out loud? I said it out loud. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir, for coming on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
Up next on the show, we grab an oval-shaped ball and toss it around the pitch as we sit down with the founder and CEO of Premier Rugby Sevens, Owen Scannell. That's straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Rugby in the United States is having a moment, though maybe we won't see it in full until 2031, when the USA We'll make history as we become the first North American nation to host the Men's Rugby World Cup, and then again in 2033 when the women come to town for their World Cup.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Michael, the U.S. won't be represented at this year's Men's Rugby World Cup in France in September because they failed to qualify.
Ooh, yeah, but Damien, 2025, 2027.
Still on the table.
Still on the table, baby! Woo! And as former USA rugby player Dan Lyle put it, the U.S. is the perfect place for the sport of rugby to grow.
I think in a lot of ways, America is a bridge to the world. Every culture is here. I think that's why it would have record attendances, record profitability. It's an exciting time for America to become the centerpiece for this sport.
Ooh, music and everything. And so joining us now to talk about the growing popularity of this sport in America is Owen Scannell, founder and CEO of Premier Rugby Sevens. Owen, thank you so much, man, for coming here on the Bloomberg Business of Sport.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Rugby! Now, that's what I call, I'll be honest, the crazy version of football, because you have no padding. You got this football, and you got a bunch of mean guys coming at you. Full speed. I'd feel comfortable with padding. There's no
or
padding
helmet,
there.
For that matter.
Well, nothing.
But they don't hit above the shoulders now. Come on now. They know they can hurt you. Really.
Yes, because we all know that being hit below the belt is just nice and soft. I know. Yes, I'm sorry. I love the blood. I'm not gonna lie. It's like, but you got some tough dudes.
And dudettes.
And dudettes, I was just going to say.
Very
playing
important,
this
yeah.
game. I mean, God bless them all.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most exciting games to watch out there. I think the players who play are some of the best athletes on the planet, really. I mean, there's people out there, and they really don't have a lot of fear when they come to, it comes to the contact point. So it's really an exciting game. If you're a football fan, you'll love to watch rugby.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. I love it. It's like anytime I can catch a rugby match, I'm like, you know what? I love you, Barry Sanders, but you didn't do that.
And what makes the Premier Rugby 7 special is that it's men's and women's teams competing under one umbrella. Tell us a little bit more about the organization, the structure of this league.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the coolest things about rugby and the sport broadly, not just sevens, is the fact that it's the same rules for men and women. So there aren't really, there's no reduction in the level of contact. There's no modifications for, to incorporate
it's just
female
as
athletes.
Painful.
It's just as painful. It's just as intense. It's just as fun. I think it is one of the only sports that does it. And the way that we've set up our competitions, we're one of the first competitions out there really predicated on the notion of equity and equality. Pay is the first component of that. It's, obviously a top line issue, but there's a lot of levels to that, right? It's access to coaching, it's high performance facilities, travel, logistics, et cetera, right?
The infrastructure.
Infrastructure, exactly. Yeah. We've set that up from the beginning to be totally equal. So when we have male and female athletes, they're competing under the same team brand umbrellas. It'd be like, the example I think would be like if the Knicks and the Liberty both played under a common brand and had a men's team and a women's team. Mm-hmm. That is, and they play for combined stakes. So we have a United Championship where teams actually will play men's matches and women's matches, but those points kind of similar to Formula One in some respects, where they will compete and have those aggregate results added up for, the performance of that team.
So talk to me about rugby in the U.S. here. This is my question, right? The U.S. did not make the World Cup, which is going to be held at the end of the year in France, right? I mean, is it because we don't have a junior league like rugby sevens here in the U.S. and more to the point, like an Antoine Dupont, who's lighting it up in France, mm-hmm. right? And obviously they're the host at the end of the year. I mean, he's drawing huge, huge crowds in mm-hmm. France. Like, who is the next U.S. emerging rugby star, and is your league going to be host to him?
I think absolutely. I mean, I think our thesis on the sport of rugby generally, right, is that and it's probably worth just taking one step back and talking about the two versions of rugby union here. But rugby union has two types. There's rugby 15s, which is the All Blacks, the
right,
Invictus,
right.
what you expect.
The Springbok.
The Springboks, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people don't know that might be the second cut in that. But no, rugby sevens is the other type, right? That's the version in the Olympics. That's played with less than half the players. I'd say it's kind of analogous to 3-on-3 hockey in terms of a style, in terms of a format, where you know, it's possession based. It simplifies the game in a lot of ways. You know, like hockey, you're not dumping it into the zone. You're not trying to kick for territory. You know, it's catch, run, and try and score. In a lot of ways, it's the perfect version for an American audience.
Right.
You know, if you look at, you turn a sevens game on TV and you've watched one American football game before in your life, you're going to understand what's happening in sevens in roughly 30 seconds. So, you know, to your question on where that next great American rugby star is going to come, almost certainly in rugby sevens.
Right.
That's, you know, when you actually look at the history of the game, Perry Baker, right, is a two-time World Sevens Player of the Year. He's played in PR Sevens. He is a crossover athlete, ex-Philadelphia Eagles cornerback practice squad player. Not the right body type for the sport. Crossed over into rugby and just absolutely dominated on the world stage, right? Those type of athletes, you know, it's the type of sport that you can pick up in your late 20s, or your early 20s, and, you know, if you have that athletic background, you have that, you know, experience and expertise in a certain sport, that translates really well, because it's not that type of sport where you need to be, you know, shooting pucks or making, you know, throwing pitches from 3 years old on. You know, you can pick it up at a later date and excel at the highest level. So we really think sevens is the, you know, the game for, you know, that's really going to succeed in America specifically for that reason.
Now get ready, because this sport is going to grow even more in the U.S., in the Olympics, I want to say 2028. Am I right about that?
Yep. That's
and
right.
Then Rugby World Cup in 2031. Which, well, first
it'd be
of all,
nice if we made the cut for 2031.
Not like this year.
I'm
amazed by the sport itself. You know, and I know, yes, it is fun. It's fun to watch, and in this version, yes, there is some fun. But like you said, man, you gotta. Dude who was a backup quarterback for the Eagles, man, and he's coming out there. I'm running the other damn way. So, oh, I'm sorry. Can I say that? I just... I mean, it's... I have nothing but accolades for the men and women that play this sport. Have they come to you about, you know, certain things, maybe about, you know, safety or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, safety obviously is a part of the game. I think in a lot of ways, it's probably the biggest differentiator from football, and in a lot of key respects, you know, it's the game is first and foremost a game of values, right? It's a game of respect, a game of integrity, of respect for your opponent, for the referee, and really everybody involved. Part of that respect extends into, you know, your behavior on the field, right? You know, the way in which you engage, right? You know, people aren't launching themselves like missiles into people. It's just not, it's not the way that, you know, it doesn't make sense, right? You hurt yourself, you hurt the other player. And so it's, you know, there's a culture of safety and kind of respecting the other player, as part of the game. But really, I think even beyond then, the game has been at the forefront of making the rules and adjusting the rules to be increasingly more safe as it grows. You know, with from where you tackle, there's no blocking, there's no tackling above the shoulder, there's no tackling below the knee. You have to wrap, right? All these little things actually do a lot to make the game significantly more safe than you might expect.
And you get to wear really cool shirts as well. One thing about rugby is the culture, the party vibe aspect to it. It's very inviting. It's very accessible to people who hear about it. And I think about the Rugby Sevens in Hong Kong, which I know realize is professional rugby, and it's one stop on the world tour. But anyone who goes there, they might not know anything about rugby, but they come away really appreciating the game and the atmosphere. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this is an accessible sport that really invites people in?
Way that we think about our business, right? And how do we get more people interested into the sport, right? It's rugby on its own is, you know, it's a great product. It's a real, you know, if you can get people to see it, they're going to love it, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that every emerging sport says that, but I think for, you know, rugby probably in a lot of, and rugby sevens in particular, you know, really kind of grabs your eyes when it's on TV. You know, the big challenge for us is how do you get those people that are, how do you get them to have that first touch point with the sport? And so, you know, part of what we are trying to do with PR Sevens is to, really increase that kind of surrounding festival atmosphere and ambiance, right? That's kind of what Hong Kong Sevens is known for, Dubai Sevens, London Sevens. The way that we've set up our match days has a break built in the middle for live music, right? Mm-hmm. And so we'll have Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears playing at our halftime show in Austin. We have another act that'll be announced in Minnesota, but really it's about live entertainment, right? It's highly experiential, right? And so, when we think about our in-person product, we want that to have that festival atmosphere. We know that the distributed product and the content, the highlights, the action will speak for itself, but we want to make sure that fans that we have a hook to get fans that might say, oh, I'm not really sure about this, or, that there's actually, we're pushing them over the edge to make that decision and have that first rugby experience. The next step there, I think, is to then kind of get them into the ecosystem, potentially maybe, getting kids to play down the road, but that's I think, a big part of what we're trying to build.
Well, Owen, let's talk about Rugby 7. So you just mentioned it, right? June 17th, season starts Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. goes through the summer, ends in, I think, August 6th in Washington, D.C. That's the championship, right? Mm-hmm. So, you've got broadcast partners, so I think it's CBS and Fox Sports, mm-hmm. right? Yep. That your audience can see the matches. I mean, right? Like, if I want to see Ben Pinkelman, Cody Melfi, I mean, mm-hmm. You've sold me. How am I going to see them? How many cities are you going to have events in? How often is it going to air? Is it a weekly? How often?
Yeah. So this year we'll have. I mean, we've the kind of quick history of our competition is we're one of the first domestic rugby sevens competitions out there, kind of filling a part of that pyramid that didn't previously exist, and kind of looking to create that incremental opportunity for players to play, but also for fans to, I think, have a touch point with the sport. We started with a one-off pilot tournament in Memphis, Tennessee, grew that to three stops last year. This upcoming summer, we'll be doing a five-stop circuit. We've doubled the league in size just because of the interest and the excitement. We've gone to eight franchises, which each have a men's team and a women's team, and they'll play in two conferences, kind of alternating throughout the summer. So it's almost a semi-weekly type of event throughout the summer. We'll be going to Austin, Minneapolis is the first two legs, San Jose and Pittsburgh, the last two, and then the top teams from each conference will come and compete in the championship in D.C.
Got it.
It'll be distributed on CBS Sports Network and FS1. The broadcast will kind of go back and forth. Really exciting for us in a lot of ways because, as I was mentioning before, the idea of being able to get the sport in front of an audience, right? The trend away from linear to digital, people, I guess talk about that all the time, but there's still such a massive audience out there on linear television. And for us to be able to take Rugby Sevens, put that in front of people, the distilled version of rugby with the highlights, the hits, the action, the fun, it really, I think, is going to be a special summer for us just to be able to expose so many Americans to seeing that for the first time.
And then it feeds right into the Rugby World Cup, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's just perfect on the timing side. And I just have to ask while we have here about the World Cup. I think France is the favorite, according to Vegas, to win the World Cup. Who do you like this year?
It's hard, and we have a number of Kiwis in our competition, so I think they'll probably, and actually in our company, and they will get a little upset with me if I don't lean a certain way.
Irish are looking pretty good too.
The Irish look great. I think everybody would love to see a Scotland dark horse bid to
Who are the two? Chile and Portugal, right? Are back? I mean, like Chile's first time.
Yeah. You are a fire starter, man.
There's a lot of Americans going to be really upset to hear you talk about Chile and Portuguese rugby, because that's an open wound at the moment still. Yeah. So,
I'm going to put this question in the eloquent Walter Cronkite-esque way. How do you make money out of this, man?
Yeah, I mean, we are a different, I think one of the different ways that we're set up as a competition, right, is that we are a combined true single entity, right? I think when we look at where the trends in the sports business are going, right, we're kind of perfectly positioned for those, right? You look at the investment coming into women's sports. We're one of the first sports based off of gender equity from the get-go. The audience for women's sports that's coming. We're one of the first, first professional women's rugby of any kind in North America. I think when, it'll be the type of thing where you see a full contact women's sport played on TV, that's a different type of thing that people that haven't seen before. The short nature of the game, you know, sevens games are only 14 minutes long. They're tournament style format, right? Sports are getting shorter. They're getting more. They're getting faster. They're getting quicker. We fit that. The immersive live event experiences, the ticket sales component, the butts in seats, you know, that's a part of that. And then the gaming, right? You know, we are, you know, I think one of the best possible products out there for sports betting, right? You know, there's a full-time outcome every 14 minutes. You get 8 of those in a day. It's a sports bettor's dream. You know, I say it's almost kind of, you know, comparable to what you might expect for, you know, the first weekend of March Madness, right? You get a lot of that kind of really frequent outcomes. And I know that I see the smile there on the sports betting side, which is,
wheels are turning in Michael Barr's head. Do we have a good chant for, I mean, the chants are important, right? Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi.
Oh, yeah.
That for the Australian team, just talking about that festival atmosphere, what have you seen in terms of cultural things that have cropped up as a result of rugby games? Matches.
I think some of the big things you see at Sevens festivals, right? One of the things is, fans dress up in costumes.
Yeah.
Very, you know, one of the better ones I've seen, and I know because this was back in the day when I went to the old Las Vegas Sevens when they came through here. We did Will Ferrell characters. So we had, we had a Buddy the Elf. We had a Bugatu, uh-huh. And that's kind of a theme that Rugby Sevens fans are known to incorporate. You know, they pick a group costume and show up all together. There are sing-alongs. You know, you get an in-stadium host that will be, leading a Sweet Caroline or something like that with the crowd. Mm-hmm. There'll be, all sorts of fun and games, the cornhole tournaments, the other, kind of adjacent programming that really makes it, I think a special atmosphere for a lot of people to connect to.
Once again, Al, thank you so much for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. Up next on the show, boxing promoter and Matchroom president Eddie Hearn breaks down how to put together a successful boxing event. That is coming up. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio around the world. Thanks for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. Yeah, I had to wait till the drums came in. That's one of the best. That's the best part of that song, man. It's fight time! Boxing in the U.S. is experiencing a resurgence. According to Statista, in 2021, 6.7 million U.S. Americans above the age of 6 years old practiced that sport at least once, and around 1.5 million of them did it in order to participate in a competition. That's the most in its history.
So joining us now to talk about world boxing and how to promote it properly is the president of Matchroom, Eddie Hearn. Eddie, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Thanks for having me.
I'll start this one off, Michael. When it comes to setting the scene for major boxing events, the background on the fighters involved is so critical. How do you ensure that the storytelling is part of the live event?
Well, the narrative of every event, every fight, is built over a period of time. And really, the success of the show in terms of ticket sales or, live viewership or subscription is built through the narrative. So that starts a long time before. You know, as a promoter, you have to tell a story, really. I'm a storyteller. All these stories have to unfold in the build-up so that when you come on the night, those stories have been told. You know, and almost like those viewers, those spectators in the arena have already read the book. Now, the in-vision experience within the arena for us is also important. So during the night, we're playing a lot of that shoulder programming and we're playing a lot of those VTs to just get that arena pumped, live DJs, music, energy. That live experience is important for the fans in the arena, but it's also important for the viewers as well, watching on DAZN to make sure they get that energy as well. And that's our showcase as a business.
Yeah.
You know, every time we stage a live event, could be one across 10 different sports that we promote. That's our product.
But Eddie, isn't this more of the Matchroom philosophy, right? You try to have these fights in a boxer's hometown, right? You did that with Canelo Alvarez in Guadalajara. You know, you talk to us a little bit about that methodology of doing that and what that brings to the, in-person event itself.
I mean, isn't it so obvious? That's the thing that baffled me coming to America to promote was that these guys don't get built in their hometown. You know, we know that some cities will bring extra dollars to the table. Las Vegas is a great example. I mean, you know, Canelo Alvarez had to take probably a $10 million pay cut to fight in Guadalajara over doing it at the T-Mobile. But, you know, when you're building a fighter, to get that energy that we talk about, to get that passion, it's very different. Like in England, we've been doing it for years. If you're from Liverpool, you fight in Liverpool. Yeah, if you're from Manchester, you fight in Manchester. If you're from Philadelphia, you don't fight in LA. What? Yeah. How can you expect the people to be behind you?
Home field advantage is critical.
Yeah, but also like last week, we're in New Orleans with Regis Progre. You know, it's his first fight there in 5 years. This is a world champion. And it's a lot easier to sell tickets. It's a lot easier to create interest, to drive enthusiasm and atmosphere when it's your own. And that, as a viewer, you're watching this live event going, wow, this is a big event. Mm-hmm. Look at the atmosphere in there. And that's really what live sport's about.
The Olympics is something that's really important to introduce fans to boxing, to the art of the game.
Yeah, and also about development of the sport through grassroots and actually encouraging people to participate in the sport. I think at the top end, at the elitist level of the sport, there's a perception that boxing is prize fighting, and it is.
Right.
But also, we're big supporters and believers that actually boxing within the community changes young people's lives and their directions. It teaches them a lot of things that are missing from youth today. Discipline, respect, manners, physical activity, you know, mental clarity, all this kind of stuff.
Well, Eddie, when I think of live boxing matches, you know, I used to think of those events in Vegas, like you said, where you could never get a ticket, you couldn't hope to get a ticket, but you've promoted events at Wembley, 80 to 90,000 people, in Arlington, Texas, if I'm not mistaken, 73,000 people, I think the largest indoor, you know, boxing match ever, you know. But then you talk about having these kind of smaller local venues. Talk to us about how the mayor of Fresno renamed October 16th Eddie Hearn Day.
Well,
I mean, talk to us about
that. There's a really embarrassing story about that, actually. So Fresno. It was Mikey Garcia was fighting there. And we're up on the stage and then, you know, one of my team come over and said, listen, the mayor's got something for you. It's a pretty big deal. And I said, what's that? You know, and they said, look, they want October the, I think it was the October the 16th.
It was during COVID, right?
No, it's just coming through the back of COVID. Okay. And it was like a first sort of live event back. They want Saturday night to be Eddie Hearn Day, October the 16th, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, wow, they came up, they gave me a plaque and it said October 16th in Fresno, Eddie Hearn Day. And I was like, I said to my team, you know, make sure you don't schedule an event on October 16th next year because we should come back every year.
Yes. Of course.
And they said, no, it's just this year. It's actually just in 2021, I think it was. Yeah. But I was going to say I've been keeping that a secret, but I've just told everyone. So, Eddie Hearn Day for one day. But it was a great day.
What's the biggest difference from where you sit in terms of the energy between a fight that's staged in a stadium with 80,000, 90,000 seats versus a smaller, more intimate setting where, you know, everyone feels like maybe, you know, they're within 30, 40 feet of the actual ring?
Yeah, I think that a hardcore boxing fan will always prefer that intimacy.
Yeah.
And I'm in a bubble. I'm in my own world. So it could just be me watching these fights, you know. But like when you do 90,000 at Wembley, or we did Dallas Cowboys, Arlington, 76,000, Guadalajara a couple of weeks ago, 55,000, you kind of look around. And you just think, what is going on here? You know, it's quite a hallucinogenic experience where I think the hardcore boxing fan isn't a fan of those 80,000, 90,000 because they want their own little world, you know. But as a spectacle, I mean, when we talk about growing our business, when we talk about growing the sport, those nights are our most powerful.
Right.
You know, when we turn around and we say, right, tonight we're in Dallas Cowboys, you know, and I'm looking around and the images are going worldwide of, you know, that's Matchroom and that's Eddie Hearn and that's us continuing to put on the biggest shows globally. So that's, for us, the massive box ticked. But I also do like the intimacy. I mean, Madison Square Garden is only 4,000.
Yeah, that's an intimate crowd.
It is, but it's a great little, I mean, the energy is amazing.
Eddie, can I just ask you, I got to ask this question. I know I hate to get serious, but it is a question I think that's kind of relevant given the day and age we're in. You know, you got a bit of heat for Ruiz Joshua 2.
Mm.
It took place in Saudi Arabia. Mm. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit. You know, are there any takeaways that left you with given what's going on?
Yeah, it was quite,
Live, the yeah. PGA.
It was quite challenging because it was at a time as well. I mean, we're looking back, we're talking about 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
Where
same thing, though, it was human rights, probably even more so.
Absolutely. And you know, it's difficult. I don't like to just distance boxing from other sports, but what we talked about earlier, it is prize fighting. right? And when others are there already, not to pass the buck, but when WWE are there, you know, at the time PGA were in there, you know, staging events, Formula One were doing big deals with them. I looked at it and I was like, guys, we're just staging a fight.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very difficult. My job is to maximize the income of a fighter in a short career and provide them with the biggest opportunities. And when I'm saying to Anthony Joshua, you've got $20 million to fight Andy Ruiz at MSG, or $60 million to fight him in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. It's a very short conversation. And actually, I'm not really doing my job if I don't deliver that opportunity.
You know, it's an interesting point you make, though, to, you know, pugilism and human rights. You know, who cares, right? Mm. But when you're talking golf, which is, you know, another game or sport, however you want to look at it, within the context of human rights, it took on a very, very different... Mm. I'm just pointing
that
out.
You know what I will say, though? Having been there, I've staged two fights in Saudi Arabia. Right. The people behind the growth of boxing in Saudi Arabia have a massive passion for boxing. Grassroots participation has gone up nearly 600%
wow.
since that fight. I saw with my own eyes when we returned there last year for Usyk against Joshua, it was a completely different place, right? Kids were out, girls were out, women were out. We were going to local boxing clubs. So, you know, I get asked the question all the time about sports washing. I have to say, I've seen what live sport has done to make changes in that country. Do there need to be more changes? Of course. I'm not going to sit here and say everything's fine over there. But I've seen with my own eyes sport change, you know, young people in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, we're now negotiating another fight there, which is Joshua Wilder for December.
Yeah, I mean, for somebody that with deep pockets to come in there and rattle the system a bit, I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, I take your point. I agree.
Eddie Hearn, president, Matchroom Sport. Oh, my goodness. Eddie, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
For coming on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Up next on the show, Scarlett sits down with Next in Sports hosts Jason Kelly and Vanessa Perdomo to discuss the latest from their show as they focus on the popular tailgating game, cornhole. I've been waiting for this. Where's my money? That's next on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. I'm Michael Barr along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we cover the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu. And today we are bringing in Bloomberg's Vanessa Perdomo and Jason Kelly, who have a new series called Next in Sports. And their latest episode focuses on, I don't know if it's a sport, an activity?
I would gladly say that it's, I wouldn't call it a sport either. It's a competition for sure.
And that would be on cornhole. And cornhole is I mean, this is the game that people play when they go tailgating.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
So it's necessarily a drinking game or like a backyard game. But listen, I mean, anything is a sport if you decide to make it one. I think that's something that we've seen a lot when we're filming this series. And if you take it seriously enough, which they do, and these players, athletes, if you so call them, work really hard. They do, you know, and they practice their craft a lot.
And they're really
and
good.
They're really good.
They're really, I mean, I think we can both attest to the fact they are a crazy good at it. I mean, it does take an amazing amount of concentration, hand-eye coordination, focus. I mean, just
that sounds like
all
skill.
Of it. I mean, there
definitely
is,
skill.
There is real skill to it. And, I mean, if we gauge what's a sport by what's on ESPN, it's a huge hit on ESPN. It was like the pandemic hit.
It is. And every time we talked to someone about it, they were like, oh yeah, definitely watched on ESPN, 100%.
And part of that is because during the pandemic, when live sports shut down, the commissioner of this cornhole, the professional cornhole
American League? Cornhole League,
okay,
the ACL.
Thank you. Yep. ACL, yes. He saw an opportunity and he managed to convince ESPN. I guess it wasn't very hard to convince ESPN, but he said, let's continue doing this.
Yeah, he did it and basically said, I can stand up. This is Stacey. He said, we can stand up tournaments. I have the social distancing figured out. We obviously aren't going to have audiences. And ESPN, I mean, remember, this is summer of 2020. They were desperate for, mm-hmm. I mean, desperate probably understates how they felt about their lack of content. I mean, they really needed stuff on the air. And I have to say, I mean, I certainly was one long before we worked on this story. You tune in and you're like, yeah, I want to watch this. Like, I'm in.
It is kind of, it's definitely captivating and something that is easily digestible as well, especially because of how many people do know how to play, how many do people play at tailgates and stuff. So you can definitely watch it. But when then you talk to the athletes themselves and stuff, and they are not the ones who are playing at the tailgate. They're better. Mm-hmm. And it's funny listening to them hear people talk to them about, oh, I could definitely beat you, you know, and they're like, I don't think so.
So here's the thing that had me really mesmerized was that you had men in suits talking to you about cornhole being the next NFL, which, you know, at the start of the video, I kind of was like, really? How on earth is that going to happen? What is the business model here for cornhole being a profitable enterprise?
So I was in that interview with Jim Simmons, who's one of the backers of this league, and he said it with a straight face. And I think he means it in the sense that if you think about the potential of all the people who could play this game, it's massive. It has not really gone global yet. They're trying to do that. They're in Europe a bit, but they want to take it even more global. To me, one of the most interesting bits about it, I think Vanessa feels the same way, is that they essentially own the sport too. So they have, you know, all these licensing and marketing deals. And so if you're buying an official cornhole board, like, that's going back to them. They have a real control.
They sell the bean bags. They sell the board.
Yeah, exactly. It's the bags. It's the boards. And you would be shocked at how many bags, how many different kinds of bags there are.
Yeah.
And really? That they're allowed to use them.
Right.
Like, they don't have to use the same ones competing against each other. And I would say there's dozens, if not hundreds, of different kinds of bags. So that's its own revenue stream right there. Which, when we played, me and Jason played with the pros, and we did use different kinds. And I will say it made me really want to get like official bags because it felt very different.
Yeah, and it when you're playing with professionals, first of all, they're really good. Second of all, like, the field of play is typically much longer than you set up at, you know, your backyard tailgate or your backyard or a tailgate, and it is it's really difficult. One of my favorite things about it was talking to this guy, Trey Ryder, who has been called the Tony Romo of cornhole, and part of that is because so he became. By the way, this guy graduated summa cum laude from Clemson in chemical engineering. He's like a super smart guy. Mm-hmm. But now he works for the American Cornhole League in part because his dad told him, like, this is where, you know, like, you could be really good at this as a commentator. He basically told him, you're not good enough to play.
Oh, wait, a trained chemical engineer.
Yes.
Does not play cornhole, but he does the color commentary.
He
for
plays
cornhole,
but he's not good enough to be like the circuit. Uh-huh. He's really good, but he is now like the guy.
The official voice.
And if you watch the games that he is calling, like he's just like Tony Romo. Like he'd be like, okay, and he'll draw like with a telestrator, like this is where the bag's gonna go, mm-hmm. and this is what he's gonna do. And he's gonna, you know, try and block here. He's gonna do that. I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah, the athletes said that they can actually hear him because in this stage of their production, it looks great on TV, but they're very close to each other, mm-hmm. so the table's right there, and they said they can often hear him like. So it gets in their head a little bit. They probably are thinking the exact same thing, but it's almost that thing where you almost want to prove him wrong because you're like, I don't want to listen to you're inside my head right now.
When you were talking to the athletes, Vanessa, did anyone talk about Baggate, the cheating scandal that took place in cornhole? Apparently, there are some bags that were maybe too small and too light. They were not regulation size, and this caused like a lot of controversy, a lot of scandals in late 2022.
Oh, that's very interesting. They did not talk to me about that.
Yeah, I know a little bit about it. I mean, they say that it wasn't intentional. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there was a whole back and forth about it. But it also, I mean, in some ways, to me, it shows that this is a sport that people are taking seriously because anytime anybody's trying to sort of hedge it, I mean, there is real, you know, there is real money involved. I mean, it's getting to the point. I mean, we talked with one person who is, I mean, I think making a living.
Oh,
right.
Yes, absolutely. One of
they make enough money playing cornhole professionally.
Yes. Yeah. So the number one female in the world at the time, I think the rankings might have shifted a little bit, but her name's Cheyenne Bubenheim, and she is 100% a cornhole professional. That's all she does. That's mm-hmm. She makes enough money from her prize money, from all the events they have all year long. And she said she's never played another sport before in her life. She was a competitive person, but never really was an athlete. And this is her life. She trains with 6 hours or so.
She practices 6 hours a day.
She practices around, you know, about that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And she's such a pro. We played. She gave me some lessons. She's really good in very humble, but also in the way that her strategy was, I'm just going to shoot it straight in the hole. And I know they're going to miss before I do. Mm-hmm. And then Jason played with someone who his strategy was to block the hole. So he was going with a very different strategy. But when we played, she was right. She did not miss a single one.
She didn't miss one.
Yeah.
And you guys won.
And we won.
And Vanessa beat me. Just because I know we're keeping score, or at least we're keeping score.
We are.
Among all the different sports that you guys try next in sports, Vanessa's in the lead right now.
Yeah.
I think you're in the lead right now.
I'm in the lead.
More to come. Stay tuned.
You had mentioned that this is a very American activity or sport, although they are trying to expand. A lot of this depends on whether people play this in their backyard, whether they do this at tailgating. Europe doesn't really have a tailgating culture, does it?
No,
Not
in the same way. And so we'll see sort of where it picks up. I mean, it is a very social game. It is very easy to pick up. I mean, my own experience with it was, you know, last summer and the summer before that, I had kids graduate from high school. And so I was on like the grad party circuit. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let me tell you, like the dad intensity around this sport is high level. And I mean, we also saw it. So we were in Phoenix right before the Super Bowl for the, wait for it, Super Hole tournament.
That's
the name of the tournament. Mm. And we saw Ryan Fitzpatrick. He was playing. We talked with him a little bit about it. And like just about everything else, he's super into it.
He lost.
And I wouldn't say he was mad, but he was like intent on getting back on the
court.
Oh,
he was like, I just want to keep playing.
Yeah.
He was definitely upset that he lost because he just wanted to keep playing all night. But I think that, you know, to your point, Scar, about it being a little American, how you get it become European, because one of the things that we noticed while we were there was the essence of Americana around the sport is really Evident. Mm-hmm. And one of their biggest sponsors is Bush's Baked Beans. And you just have this very American feel. So I don't actually know how they would have to change it. Yeah. Is my point, to get a big European market.
Right. One of the big sausage companies is
Johnsonville Brats, man. Yeah. Absolutely. Johnsonville Sausages. I mean, I guess the other side of that is, you know, there are a lot of places who love anything American. And I mean, nothing's more American than this.
Yeah, so lean into it, right?
Lean into it, yeah. All American all the time.
All right. I mean, it was really eye-opening because clearly this is something that a lot of people, it's accessible, first of all, and a lot of people play it, you know, at backyard parties and whatnot. And also, it's got the viewers, right?
From
those weeks in the summer of 2020 when people had nothing better to do than to watch ESPN. Not that they had nothing better to do. If they wanted to watch some live competition, that was where you found it.
Absolutely.
On ESPN. So, you know, it's somehow proven to be very durable.
Yes.
All right. Well, Cornhole, you be sure to check it out. Next in Sports premieres Wednesdays on Bloomberg Television at 10 p.m. Eastern. It's also available through YouTube and Bloomberg.com the following day, where, of course, you can catch previous installments. Everything is on demand.
Thank you, Scarlett. This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, and we'd like to thank our guests, Terrell Harris, Owen Scannell, and Eddie Hearn, for joining us on the show this week. And thank you for listening. I'm Michael Barr. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm on Twitter at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm on Twitter at DSassHour.
Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big old money in the world of sports. This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports show from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.